Welcome to a new episode of the India Independent Films Podcast. This is Rahul Desai here, film critic for Film Companion. I have with me today Ishita Sen Gupta, film critic for OTT Play. And there's no other today, but we will be discussing two titles. And I think both of us severely dislike both of them. I think both were Hindi releases last week. It feels like a year, but still. We are going to be discussing the Hotstar release Apurva, which is a survival thriller by Nikhil Nagesh Bhatt. And we are going to be discussing the big series of last week, The Railwayman, which was YRF's first web series, which released on Netflix. I'm going to start with Apurva. I'm just going to get into it, a few lines about it before we get into why we did not like it at all. Apurva is basically about a young woman named Apurva who's from Gwalior. She's on a bus ride to meet her fiancé and she gets abducted by four dacoits on the way in Chambal. And the rest of the film is basically a survival thriller of how she escapes these monstrous men. All four of them have their moments with her and she. It's basically a very, very, very diminished version of NH10 if you have to really put it in one line. Ishita, first thoughts on Apurva?
I think the way you said is correct. It's a very diminished version of NH10. It also undoes everything which NH10 did very well. So just to reiterate what Rahul said, it's a survivor drama. And there's this girl called Apurva who is a student. And she is supposed to get married to someone. And the day she is abducted, she was going to visit the fiancé. And the film more or less unfolds in one day, half a day, basically, when she's trying to run away from the people who have kidnapped her and what follows after that. And for the most part, it's Apurva is not just like bad. It's also very, very unwatchable, you know, and because I feel like there are bits in the films where I was literally looking away from the screen because I feel like Nikhil Nagesh Bhatt, who has also made Kill, by the way, which we will probably see sometime next year. So he showcases, you know, like any problem or the way the men were treating Apurva in a very crude way, which I felt was absolutely unwarranted. And if you compare this to NH10, there was so much like the world building, the tension that was done. None of it is there in Apurva. Also, I feel like before we get into deeper detail, I also feel like it's a male director problem. Now, you can come at me and say that even NH10 was made by a male filmmaker. But I feel here the very idea of fearlessness, of women fearlessness, female fearlessness is seen as the absence of fear. Which I find very problematic because, you know, like, as is evident, because it's a survival drama, at some point in the film, she basically switches and she tries to defend herself and protect herself and ends up killing everyone. It's not a spoiler. And then, you know, that switch. And I feel like when I was watching Apurva, I kept thinking about NH10 and why it worked so much for me. And I feel like, you know, at least in that film, you understood that, you know, that fearlessness in any form is basically when you are too afraid to be afraid anymore. And I felt Apurva was just like the director took fearlessness, the ideas of fearlessness, revenge on very face value. Now she will become vindictive and now she will become fearless. So there was just no continuity in terms of emotions. So yeah, a lot of things didn't work for me. Sorry.
Yeah, no, that's true. I mean, overall, the broader picture is that, and it's a good point because I feel like, the fearlessness in NH10 came across as numbness after a while because of the terror that she had to go through the night. Her boyfriend was, you know, killed and she had basically nothing left. And as you very nicely put it, that, you know, when you're too afraid to be afraid anymore, it's more of a defense mechanism than a conscious reaction. And I felt like here it was so performative. It just felt like the film was getting off on being a film itself. And it was very tropey in a sense. Like Tara Sutaria, you know, I mean, people will say this is a very brave role. It's her trying to act and it's her like trying to shed that glamorous image she has in the other films where she barely acts in. But I think a lot of her sort of lack of ability also infects like this film, because that switch we are talking about is one of the biggest problems with the film, because suddenly, I mean, hunted becoming the hunter is one trope, which is fine. We've seen that in a lot of movies, revenge movies. But here it's just like, I mean, it's staged in such a way that it's impossible to take seriously. You know, she suddenly sort of flashes the spotlight, like there's that flashlight moment where the guy in a well is sort of drowning Rajpal Yadav character, one of the dacoits is in the well, and she puts the flashlight on her face to show him that she's come to now terrorize him, and the tables have turned. I mean, nobody really does that. If you're going to want to make a realistic survival thriller, if you try to be realistic about all the violence and, you know, however crude it looks on screen, if you're going to go so far as to show the woman sort of, almost sexually abused by four of these men, and that too in a setting like that, then there's no reason to be doing stuff like this. And even in the flashback, there are songs as to how she sort of got together with her fiancé, their love story, totally unnecessary. There's no such thing as subtext anymore in such films. And it ruins the momentum of a survival thriller. And another thing that also bugged me is that, you know, you're making a film about dacoits in Chambal, and it's just such a one-dimensional view of these four. Technically, they aren't even dacoits. These four robbers who want to rob vehicles and sort of travelers on a particular highway, and they just abduct her because they get pissed off with her husband, with her fiancé on the phone call. So very like murderous, brutal, impulsive men, but that Chambal setting really it wasn't really needed. They could be anywhere in the country, and it really didn't add to the texture of, you know, the film, because the setting matters a lot. Like in Abhishek Chaubey films, the setting matters. The Chambal in Sonchedia, that really gave context and emotional heft and cultural heft to the film. Here it really doesn't matter. It's just four men going after a woman, and that woman turns around and takes revenge. That's it. Like, they're no different from like the revenge dramas of the 90s, like Anjaam or any other film, except it's 2023. So it just came across as very stilted, very weird, very performative.
Yeah, also, I feel like, first of all, I feel we should not even take Soncharia's name, yeah, and Apoorva in one breath. Also, you know, I never thought I'd say this, but I did think about the film like 2-3 days later, after I wrote the review and I was done watching and cribbing about it. And I was like, I don't know, it just really nagged me, and I haven't written about it because at that time somehow it didn't strike me. I was too angry. But I think later when I got some objectivity, it really nagged me. If you remember that in the flashback, as Rahul said, there are extensive flashbacks of how Tara Sutaria basically got engaged to this guy, this banker. His name is played by Dhairya, I think. And if you notice that, you know, the filmmaker insists on some sort of virginal quality in her. She will not give in. She will not kiss him. Mm. And I think at some point he tries to initiate something, and she's like, I will do it only after marriage, or some on those lines she said, which I found extremely problematic, because at some point I feel the filmmaker was also trying to establish her pious state in order to... in order to basically tell us that how terrible it is for a woman who is as pious to go through a sexual harassment, as if it would be any less for someone who is not.
Yeah.
You're getting my point. It was just like later I found it bizarre. And I also feel like it was a bit of a virgin goddess syndrome, because like you said, that the switch happens. After the switch happens, she becomes a sort of a very possessed female who just goes on killing, and for some reason in the dark she never misses any mark, like she just knows to hit people or whatever. And it's just that, you know, how writers also, they see things in, or especially when it comes to female characters, their idea of victimhood and piety and strength in very definite and reduced terms. You know, like if she's good, she has to be a virgin. And if she is powerful, then she has to be like possessed, like their idea of a female goddess. You know, like you said, there is no subtext. There is literally no subtext. It was like a very, very poorly written female protagonist, among others, I feel.
Yeah, she did. Yeah, the idea was to sort of turn her into some sort of mythological figure by the end. And it came across as really crass and really black and white in that sense. And it is a male gaze problem also, the way she was sort of tortured by them in the middle of the film, the way the four dacoits spoke amongst each other and bantered amongst each other. It's just like the filmmakers were taking great pleasure in showing us how crude they were, how brutal they were. And it's not the first time Abhishek Banerjee has played like a character like this. You know, he played it in, I think, a couple of films, at least, even Patal Lok.
But
here it just came across, it just did not work on many levels, of course, because of the writing. And I don't think Tara Sutaria was capable of pulling off a role like that. And like, I mean, I'm not even getting into the fact that the film itself was terrible. She did not sound or look like any sort of small town girl that they wanted her to be. That piousness you're talking about did not come across at all in the characterization of her. And it's a very good point you made, because it's that entire backstory they show is entirely for that purpose, just to show us that, you know, it will be worse when a woman like her is assaulted. That pretty much says everything there is to say about filmmakers like this, who basically treat this as a genre more than a story, or more than an experience or a traumatic experience that happens to a woman. They treat it as a genre, and what happens then is you tend to treat everything as a trope and a gimmick. And you know, we've been hearing about Kill, which has been making waves in Toronto, I think last year's TIFF. But you know, this was very much almost an action film on its own, and there was no real human thread in it, because every person in this felt like an idea that was there to serve the sort of action within the film and to serve the suspense within the film. And none of it was very well choreographed. The you know, the locations, again, as I said, Chambal was used to no effect at all. There was nothing we knew about the dacoits themselves. It was there for the heck of it, and it was just there to shock and awe. And that kind of filmmaking is really, it's really passé these days.
Yeah, I agree. Like, one of them, if you remember, he had a hearing aid, and I thought it will add to something.
Yeah.
It didn't. It was just there. It did not, and he died also.
Yeah.
Again, it's not a spoiler. Everyone dies. Also, the end may the VFX is the worst. The train VFX, it is just like, it is really, really bad. And I don't
really remember the VFX yet. Maybe I tuned out by then, but just to give context, like a lot of the, that half of the film, the end that Ishita is talking about, shot in the night. And as we know, filming in the night, filmmakers use a lot of tricks for that. And it mostly doesn't come off in films like this. Especially where, you know, there's a light problem and you have to figure out what the characters are doing, where they are running. You almost make the woman wear something white so that, you know, we know where she is at any point. But it's just one of many things that is wrong with this film. I'm just glad it didn't get like a theatrical release. And even though the filmmakers thought they were being very smart by dropping like these pop cultural references in the film, I think there's a bunch of, there's at least one or two Anurag Kashyap film references. There was a Kabir Singh. One of the characters was watching Kabir Singh. There was a Shah Rukh Khan bobblehead in the car. So I mean, they think they're being very smart about, you know, toxic masculinity in Bollywood. But if you make a film like this, you become a victim of your own little ploy also. So I think the film was trying to be over smart. Even the casting of Rajpal Yadav, who normally plays a comedian in every film, here he's playing a very chilling senior dacoit, almost the leader of the gang. But it just doesn't come off. So I don't think we should be allotting too much time to this. I think 14 minutes is more than enough with Apoorva. For those of you who watched it, our condolences. For those of you who haven't,
give us your condolences.
Yeah, think twice before you do, and do listen to this podcast, and then don't blame us later. We're going to move on to the show that we actually wanted to talk about, The Railway Men. As I said, Virat's first web series, it's directed by Shiv Ravel. It is written by Ayush Gupta. It has a huge star cast. You know, the kind of cast a lot of web shows tend to have these days, which is always a good thing, because you normally don't get so many actors under one umbrella. in feature films anymore. It's mostly like superstars in those films. So on paper, Railway Man has a lot going for it. You know, it's actually an interesting story. It's based on the bunch of railway workers who saved many lives during the 1984 Bhopal gas tragedy, when, you know, the Union Carbide plant, there was a gas leak. Of course, we've seen a lot of literature, a lot of films made over the years about this particular tragedy. I remember reviewing one 5 or 6 years ago. I think it was a Hindi film or a Hindi-English film. But we've not seen this particular dimension of it through the lens of the railway workers who sort of united to save lives. Bunch of characters in this film. Ishita, do you want to maybe like give us an idea about all these characters?
Yeah, so as Rahul said, that it is, the Railway Man is about the 1984... It is the 1984, right?
Yeah.
Sorry, yes, 1984 Bhopal gas tragedy, when the gas leak from the Union Carbide plant, and it is considered to be one of the worst industrial disasters in the world. And the film basically tracks mainly the railway officials who, at that night, the night it happened, they basically became like the first responders. And the show across 4 episodes is about how they went on to help as many people as they could. So we have, as Rahul said, there's a terrific ensemble of actors. So there is KK Menon, who is Iftikhar Siddiqui. He's basically a very upstanding station master. There is Imad Riaz's character, which Babil plays, and he's like a loco pilot. And the night when the disaster strikes, it is his first day in the job in the railway station. There is a Express Bandit character, which Divyendu plays, who basically at that time was notorious because he used to steal from a railway station. And he had come to Bhopal because he had figured that there was a lot of money at the station, and he got stuck because of the disaster. So there's another character of a journalist, which Sunny Hinduja is playing. For those who are aware of history, the character is modeled on Indian journalist Rajkumar Keswani, who was actively talking about the danger which the Union Carbide plant was posing. And there's also Madhavan, who plays the general manager of Central Railway, who basically goes to help them at some point in the show. So these are mainly the primary characters. And you can see that they're like all good actors.
Yeah, there are a bunch of others, like Dibyendu Bhattacharya playing manager at Union Carbide. There's like Raghubir Yadav, who's a train guard, because there's a parallel narrative of a train heading towards Bhopal. And there's Mandira Bedi inside, who's playing a Sikh woman. And this is also in the aftermath of the anti-Sikh riots. And so, you know, you can imagine the tension, because there are a bunch of Hindu rioters who invade the train, looking for Sikh passengers, wanting to kill them. And Raghubir Yadav plays the very large-hearted train guard who tries to protect Mandira Bedi. There are many more, actually. I'm sure I'm missing. There's Juhi Chawla also, who surprisingly turns up, I think, in the third episode or something, as a bureaucrat who's trying to figure out things in Delhi so that the Madhavan character can do his job and you know, sort of help the people in Bhopal. Because he is on his own trip trying to inspire a bunch of railway workers and officials to put their own lives in danger and head towards Bhopal despite the poisonous air, so that you know, they can reach some kind of help or medicines to them. So it's a lot of stuff going on. We have a lot on our plate, and there are, as you know, Ishita mentioned, 4 episodes. It's a mini series. Obviously, there's never going to be a sequel to this, because it is said and done. Each of the episodes 1 hour each. Ishita, first thoughts, what went wrong with this?
I mean, first, I feel like the production of it, on face value, if you ask me, the whole show mostly unfolded in a set kind of totally diluted the impact it could have had on me. Like, obviously, an easy comparison to Railway Man is Mumbai Diaries. You know, the Nikhil Advani show, which is on the government hospital in Bombay. And I feel Nikhil Advani did a great job. And even though that's also a set, though, I feel he did a great job in using the setting, the geographical setting, to create a sense of world building and tension throughout the show. and how, you know, the doctors basically respond to the crisis, which across two seasons, there are two different crises. But that's the main crux of the show. But in terms of Railwaymen, I think because it's also Yash Raj, they have a very sanitized version of everything, by which I mean poverty, you know. So obviously, like, if you like the station looks it doesn't look like one, you know, the houses, they just, it looks like a very derivative version of how they think people live in these places. So I mean, very like visually, I think what did not work for me at all, first, a lot of things did not, but I feel like the fact that most of it took part in a set just did not work for me.
Yeah, I think this was the main thing, right? Like that entire curated feeling, that design that we see in the series is something that distracted us throughout. Because I know, you know, a lot of people enjoy it in a sense that, oh, wait, it's pulpy, it's nice, like masala mainstream filmmaking, the production design, we can see it, and it's very old school. They'll use like euphemisms like that. But the point is that you're making something about a real tragedy, and you're trying to fashion real characters. And when you get your production design on, and when the YRF starts using their studio templates for it, and that very sanitized sort of look of it, it almost feels like a museum most times. It's wrong in a show like this. It just feels wrong in a show like this, because then you never tend to take it seriously. You're never going to really be bought by what is happening at the factory, what is happening at the railway station, in the train. The VFX is pretty terrible, but again, they might pass it off as something as, you know, like very vintage in a sense. But for some reason, all of this tends to have a cumulative effect on the viewers, you know, watching a show like this. Because we've seen similar sort of, I'm not just talking about Mumbai Diaries 2, we've seen this, like we've seen these industrial disasters. Chernobyl is probably the most popular example, and probably one of the better series ever made in terms of this genre. And the same with even, you know, Indian film Virus, which was made down south, Malayalam film a couple of years ago, about how the Nipah virus was spreading through Kerala. So we've seen, like, it's not like we've there's a dearth of this particular style of filmmaking. It's just that Yash Raj felt the need to impose their template onto a story like this, when normally what happens in terms of long form stories and web shows, it's always the directors and the filmmakers that come in, irrespective of who the production house is or irrespective of who the producers is. They then tell the stories their way, and maybe, you know, there'll be compromises here and there, but you can never tell that it is made by a particular studio or a particular, they tend to treat it as an alternative sort of branch of storytelling. But here, Yash, it very much looks like a Yash Raj show. And that is a problem, because, it shows, because Shiv Rawal, if you look up, he's worked as an assistant director with Yash Raj for a very long time. He's, you know, assisted since Doom 3 and Fan and Befik Race. So he's literally a school of sort of, he's part of the school of Yash Raj. So it's very visible in the way the show is designed. It's very manipulative. It's very loud. A lot of the characters come across as very corny, the way they behave, the way they act. Even the junior artists, or even the extras in the side where they have to keep choking throughout the show, at some point that starts to look really fake, because you have hundreds of people at the station on the roads, choking to death, sort of getting poisoned. It's not an easy thing to pull off if you don't have your craft on point, and I don't think they showed it.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I had a similar, and it's off topic, but I feel I had a similar problem with Brahmastra, in the sense that they made like a children's film, but they made it like a child. And I feel like Railwaymen, basically, they wanted to do a story. They wanted to retell a 1984 story, but somehow they also adopted a very dated technique. Like, they thought that is how you tell an old story. You know, because there are a lot of scenes in the show where I paused, because it was just unbelievable to me that in 2023, when we have such good long form shows, that, you know, this is what they are doing. Like, you know, it's bizarre, because there are like kids singing, like there are, you know, there are two orphans in the railway station, and these are not things we associate with storytelling now. These are very tropey things which used to exist at some point, like, you know, a villain coming with a briefcase full of cash.
Yeah.
You know, these things don't happen anymore. Like, you know, there's a scene where Babul's mother, I mean, whoever the actor who plays Babul's mother, like, she basically says, "And where's my son?" And they say that he's not there. And she looks at the camera and she gives this long sigh. And I'm like, what is happening? Because this is also the time when we are attuned to filmmakers, like, and I would say Raj and DK, because I feel when you watch something bad, you realize why something good is as good. You know, and I feel like while watching Railway Men, I really understood what works for Raj and DK, that they can like refamiliarize certain things. You know, they infuse a quirkiness in very mundane situations. Like, you know, there is a scene in the film, in Railway Men actually, when Dibindu's character, which is the express bandit, I don't know if you remember that scene, but he holds a knife to this official's neck. And then he says, okay, I have to pee, so you hold it while I'm peeing. It was a very, Raj and DK scene. Like, it was a fuzzy scene, you know, but it didn't work here at all, because there was nothing supporting that scene. Like, that level of quirkiness, it just came and went. So, yeah, I feel like, as you said, it just feels like the producers and the filmmakers of Railway Men, they are really not clued into the current streaming space in India. They do not know what is happening. And also at some point I feel like it just became like, you know, a tragedy porn of sorts, because but yeah, anyway, so after, like, beyond that, I just wanted to understand, and I feel that, you know, like when I watch a disaster film, like, suppose even, for example, Bheer also, or a Mumbai Diaries also, I feel like, you know, what really worked for me, at least as an audience when I was watching these films or shows, is that, you know, I like how they treat, they basically infuse the events with a very real-time urgency. Like, you know, in Mumbai Diaries also, that because it has happened, you know, we know what has happened in hindsight, but when you're watching the show, even if it was the terrorist attack or the flood, I feel the show really did a great job in taking each moment as it comes. You know, like, it never gave the feeling that the makers already knew the extent of the disaster.
Yeah.
And same for Bheer, I feel like, you know, that is why I feel like every odd event basically snowballs into something. And for Railway Men, I feel like somehow they basically made the show with a lot of hindsight.
Yeah.
You know, did you feel that? Like, I felt like they already knew this has happened, and now let's make in a very reverse engineering process. Did you feel that while watching the show?
Yeah, that makes sense, because, you know, that's why the characters are acting a particular way. That is why, you know, the Madhavan character gives a monologue which is terrible. Like, he thinks he's Shah Rukh Khan in that scene, sort of lecturing, almost like doing a Chakde thing, trying to really inspire his troops to take that train to Bhopal, and so many things. It probably is the case where they sort of assume that we already know the extent of damage, where they assume and where they forget that they are actually revealing things, not telling us something that already happened. And because of that, you know, there's no sort of journalistic tone to it at all. There is only this pulpy, unintentionally pulpy thing that they do. And, you know, I did not like Divendu's character at all. That the way the dacoit was sort of designed and has a change of heart. It was all very 1970s, 1980s. And it just doesn't fit here. And even the way the Americans, the couple of American bosses were, I mean, they were like some Tim Burton characters in a real film. I don't know what was happening. They were talking like they were born evil. And that's a red flag very early, because we see a couple of white characters in the beginning. We see a couple of these bosses saying things, dismissing Indians as if they were servants. And it's such an old and such a cliched thing to do, to tell us that, oh, look, the villains are not going to take any accountability for this. They are going to escape. And what is left is poor Indian citizens who are going to suffer for the rest of this show and for the rest of the next few decades. And it's just such unsubtle, such un-nuanced storytelling. in that sense. And when they have such good material, like you're actually telling a specific, like Mumbai Diaries did, you're basically zooming in onto a very specific area of a survival drama in a way, of a actual life, real life disaster drama. And you have like railway workers here, just like they had a hospital there, but you're still messing up that opportunity by going overboard in every other way, you know, like, and despite having such a good cast, which was such a disappointment.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah, exactly. But did you like as you said, you know, that the cast, did any of the actors work for you?
Yeah, I was just going to ask you that also, because I mean, I really wanted to like KK Menon, and I've always liked him. I think he's had a like big year in terms of web shows, because he did Farzi and he did Bombay Meri Jaan, and now he is in this show. And I just feel like this show didn't use him as well as they could have. Like, he plays a very interesting character. Of course, he's sort of a rightist Muslim character in terms of the environment, but they didn't explore that enough, you know. Like, they really only made him more of a figurine by the end of it, where he is just sort of, his eyes are always watery, his skin is red, and he's just choking, and that's pretty much the performance they needed from him for the last two episodes out of four. And I don't think they got across enough, they didn't explore his character enough because of that, and I don't think they did justice to his talent also. Apart from that, I thought Babil Khan was interesting, but I mean, especially in his first few scenes where he's speaking to a journalist and trying to get justice for a friend who died in the factory a year ago. I thought the way he was talking there was interesting, the way he was behaving was interesting, because at some point he reminds you of his father, Irfan, but at the same time he manages to be his own self, which is a very interesting trait he has, and which might serve him well in the future, because he has a fascinating screen presence. We've seen him in almost a teenage comedy like a couple of months ago, and now we see him in a show like this, where he's playing like a poor ex factory worker who's now a loco pilot on his first day. So very specific cultural thing to do, and I think he had some presence, but it's just that the show just wasn't good enough to capitalize on it, because in the end he was also reduced to that same savior sacrificial lamb towards the end of the series. So again, there were so many good names in this. Sunny Hinduja is usually solid, but he really didn't. He was, again, a lot of his performance was reduced to action. Juhi Chawla didn't have much to do. Dibyendu Bhattacharya was actually, I quite liked him in the first episode, because he was the only one who showed a sense of urgency. And I know you have conflicting feelings about him as an actor, but I thought he was very interesting, because he was our point of contact in the first episode, and he was the one who was basically the almost the alarm as to what went wrong in the factory. And he obviously, as the manager, he sacrificed himself for evil white men. But yeah, I thought, I was hoping that he would survive the whole series so that we could see more of him. But no such thing happened. You know, they wasted Raghuveer Yadav. Mandira Bedi was barely there. It's a waste of a good cast.
Yeah, I feel like Babil, like you said, he has some earnestness, you know, which really works for characters like this. I feel like same for the last film that he did, the Netflix film, and this too. Like, I think the only moment I was close to being moved in the show was when he tells KK's character that, you know, some relatives of mine are coming in the train, and you know, just tell them that I'm there. And it just, the way he delivers it, or as you rightly pointed out, and I had kind of forgotten about it, that, you know, his initial scenes where he's talking to the journalist, there is a twang, there's a little bit of an accent he uses. I mean, not accent, just the dialect, like, you know, he speaks in a certain way, which I thought was pretty, like, it was very thoughtful of him to, you know, to do that. And and also, like, as a because of his earnestness, I think it just informs his role as a whistleblower. You know, because he just looks like an inherently nice guy. You know, you know that, you know, he probably would be that person. Yes, Dibyendu, I don't know. There are two Dibyendus. They're like spelling difference. But I want to say that Dibyendu, who is the Mirzapur Dibyendu, I just feel like his was such, it really hurt me how poorly they did the character, like how poorly they treated the character, because, you know, like he having a change of heart, as you said, it's a very, like, you know, 80s trope thing, and they gave him nothing to work with. He's really like a good actor. Like you have been telling me for the longest time how good he is. But yeah. I just did not feel for him at all. Like, you know, it seemed like a very unidirectional, like for the longest time, I did not know, you know, what they were trying to do with the character, because he himself was very, and it was not even some rewarding ambiguity. It was just very confused writing, I feel, when it came to his character, because you just did not know what they wanted to do with him. And same for KK. I mean, it's like, it's really sad that I felt the same for Bombay Meri Jaan, that they did not use him as they could have. And I think same for this also, like he could have done this role in his sleep.
Yeah.
You know, it's a very physically demanding role though. And he was just very agile and alert and everything. But it's also something like the idea of a man tortured by his past, and the fact that the man is being played by KK is an idea I'm sold.
Yeah.
Like, I really want to watch him like that, but it just somehow, it just did not come across. But I want to specifically say how terrible Madhavan was in the show.
I forgot him.
He was, like you said, he gave that Shah Rukh Chaddi speech. Like, you know, if you have any, like, do you, basically, Madhavan's character is this, again, this righteous, also this, he's like a non-conformist, basically. So he is given orders from higher up of not to do anything, not to go to Bhopal and help these people. Because obviously, you don't know the extent of what is happening, but he absolutely gathers his whole bunch of doctors. And the way the show comes to it also was bizarre to me, because look at it in real time, because that's how we are supposed to look at it. Something terrible is happening, and you are telling me that he gave such a rousing speech that none of the doctors backed out, saying, no, I'm sorry, I'm scared. So all of them came together, and here is Madhavan in a very, very fake train, telling the driver faster, you know, drive faster. And I'm like, this is just bizarre. But Madhavan just... I mean, at some point, I was like, maybe the white guy is as bad as Madhavan. And I feel like the white guy was like one breath away from asking for Lagan. Like, I thought he will just ask.
Yeah, seriously. I'm glad you mentioned Madhavan, because he was a bit of a ham. Like, did you realize from the beginning that him and the Juhi Chawla character were husband and wife, like, sort of...
Very much.
Yeah, because I don't know why they treated that as a reveal. Again, one of the gimmicks. Because, you know, for those who haven't watched the show yet, Juhi Chawla's character is just... Basically, there's a lot of tension between them on the phone. He always disobeys her. He's in his last week, he's disillusioned with the ministry. So he's going to quit. And she's the only one who believes in him. So you get all this, you know, back and forth happening on the phone. And she defends him in Delhi. But then... Finally, in the end, in one of the last phone calls, you realize that they were, you know, husband and wife, and maybe they're going through a rough patch, or they are estranged, or they're divorced. I don't know. I'm not sure. I don't care. But yeah, and then, you know, the camera pans to a family photo and shit like that. Basically, it's just unnecessary things, not needed at all. And Madhavan makes it worse by performing the way he does. I don't know what's happened to him since he's gone, like, so blatantly pro-establishment. More or less the same as Kangana Ranaut. I think it's almost an illness in terms of being an artist. Something happens, you become a lesser actor, because Madhavan is probably one of the worst things of this show. And that's saying a lot, because there are many bad things. And, you know, be it the background score, be it the extras, be it the way the VFX goes, be it even the lack of suspense in the events, that entire train thing that happened in the fourth episode, where there are at one point three trains, I don't even know if there are two trains, and they're all heading towards each other, and it becomes an entirely different thriller, a locomotive thriller, you know, so to say. And it's almost like then people forget about the you know, the poor people who died at the Bhopal sort of railway station or in the city. So it just feels very very tokenistic, again, you know, very over constructed. And I think that's a very big viral problem. Sometimes it works, you know, if there's a script that's smart enough to look within and be self-reflexive, or to maybe be a little self-deprecatory, but not here. Like, it did not work. This old-fashioned style did not work here. Another thing I was surprised about, and before we wrap up, we can maybe, I can ask you, I noticed that this, I was expecting this show to be panned throughout, but it's gotten a fair amount of good reviews. And I don't know why that is.
Rahul, also, wait, wrapping up, I have at least two more grievances.
You must continue.
So one, I feel like the Madhavan and the Juhi Chawla dynamic, I feel it was kind of modeled on the Irfan and Tabu dynamic in Talwar. I feel so. Okay. I mean, because, you know, at some point he's like, I want to come back home, and she says, come back. And I feel like this idea of a man who is disillusioned by the system coming back to his wife, we had seen it so well done in Talwar, yeah, between these two characters. And I feel that's where they were going, which made me even angrier, you know, at the characters. Also, in terms of, so there are two things also I want to say. One is, I feel like, you know, like we spoke a lot about Yashraj's problem. And I feel, but do you feel this? Because this is what my observation was. I feel the idea of introducing these big actors randomly in every episode, like Juhi Chawla just comes in, I think, episode 2 or 3. Mandira, yeah, Bedi just arrives at some point. I also feel, you know, if done in a film, these would have been like cameos, which would have probably worked, and which these are flexes which a production house like Yashraj can afford. You know, we have seen it in their films, like the Pathan or Tiger or whatever. Do you think that was the hangover they were working at?
Could be. Because, you know, they're known for a very specific brand of storytelling now. And sometimes it can sort of be a very nice nostalgic callback to a more innocent era of filmmaking. Like even that Vicky Kaushal film, Great Indian Family, which we sort of liked, which at least I sort of liked. I thought that tone worked there well, you know, the simplistic sort of old-fashioned loud tone. But I guess that hangover does seep into something like this as well, because I don't think they know any other way, unless it's like a film that they don't want to market, like the early Dibakar films that they were producing, or Titli. They just like let it go by the wayside, because those filmmakers have dared to put their stamp on it and absolutely not done the Yashraj thing of making it look like a studio film. And when they hire filmmakers who have their own sort of auteurs, who have their own signature, who are versatile enough to make any kind of film, I noticed that they almost disown those kind of filmmakers. So I don't know. It's hard to really speculate, but yeah, it is very definitely an aesthetic hangover that they seem to have, and it just doesn't work. And long form stories, I don't want to see stuff like this produced by Yashraj if it's going to be like web shows. It's tougher to sit through a web show. It's tougher to write about them, especially when it doesn't work from frame one for you. When there's no nuance behind it, when there's no thought process behind it, except, oh, let's kill them with production design. We're going to show them that we can construct the whole thing on set. That doesn't really work for us in web storytelling. 2023 Hindi web shows are at a very high standard. Like, the bad ones are the bad ones, but the good ones are really good. You can put them right up there with the best all over the world. And I don't think Yashraj is very aware of that particular. They are still in that era when they did Powder and a couple of shows for YRF television back when it existed for very briefly. And they thought they were ahead of the curve then. Now they are not. Like, you can't still live in that era.
Right. Yeah, true. I
agree. Yeah. So yeah, my just last question, I was wondering what you thought about a lot of positive reviews it seems to be getting. I think it's mostly because of the source material, and because it's, you know, there is on paper, there's so much potential, as we tend to often say about, you know, good stories ruined by bad filmmaking, or socially relevant sort of messages ruined by like the you know, overwriters filmmaking. But yeah, I think sometimes it's very difficult to distinguish between what happened and how the way it's being told. And I guess, I mean, for me, it was very easy here to say that it was terrible. But I think that's the only reason I can think of, because I was quite surprised to see a lot of good reviews. And mostly them saying that, oh, expansive, very old-fashioned, nice show from YRF, and YRF doing something different. It's really not something different. That's the problem.
Yeah, I feel like, as you said, I think the good reviews, or I haven't read actually, I don't know. So, but I'm assuming that the good reviews are also hinged on the fact on what the show represents more than what it does, because it is about the 1984 Bhopal gas tragedy. And you know, like as you said, on paper it works because it's very Chernobyl like, because it is also making it's taking a stand in the way that it's looking for accountability. You know, it's basically saying that, you know, this is what happened, but not just this, there are also people responsible for it, and it goes both ways. And on paper this works, but the execution did not work for me. And I think when we are, like, you know, reviewing a show, I think that's what we should look at.
Yeah,
you know, that how it was executed, because like, you know, so much of the show also, and it's also like the filmmaker's problem, and I think it's his debut work. Like, you know, there are these, obviously the screenplay is extremely crowded, there are a lot of things happening, but I think why I also ended up feeling nothing from the show is also because it's a crowded screenplay, and on top of that, I think the filmmaker kept forgetting characters, and he kept forgetting plots. So there are, you know, like you mentioned, that train which was infiltrated by the Hindu writers, you know, and they run after Mandira Bedi, and that's a scene, it's working, and then he just leaves it midway, and then he goes somewhere else. And I think for a show like Mumbai Diaries, it worked also because, you know, the way the camera moved inside that hospital, it was, if you remember, the second season was also unbelievably crowded for Mumbai Diaries also. Like a lot of things were happening. But I feel that, and that is when you, I think you can distinguish between a good and a bad filmmaker, is that, you know, how I bought into it. Like, I kind of submitted to what they were trying to say. But in this case, I never got, like, I was just never in the plot or in the thick of the railway men. So I feel like probably the good reviews probably is like because of what the show is about.
So I guess Mumbai Diaries also had that crutch of being able to be more fictional than something like this, where, you know, the sense of reverence tends to show because these are real life characters, most of them, at least in this show. And of course they are dramatized, but, you know, it's there's always a sense of, what if we offend someone? We need to stick as close to possible to the real people. We see footage in the end also, which is not very smartly done. And this show isn't even smart enough to be a mood piece like Chernobyl was. You know, I don't like comparing it to something like Chernobyl, but it has to be done because very similar subjects. And that the best part about that film was that it was atmospheric, was that it has enough time, enough silence, enough pauses to become a mood piece, to haunt the audience. But here everything was moving so fast, there were so many parallel tracks, so crowded the script was, that there was no sense that, okay, this is how Bhopal became that night, or this is how Bhopal was before that or after that. It's just a lot of bad VFX and a lot of people choking. And it could have been way, way better than that. Like, you can shoot the city in so many different ways without really shooting the gas, without really shooting the poison, without really shooting people, like, really sort of falling onto the streets and dying. And Chernobyl did that so well, but unfortunately for this, it was very happy being, like, homegrown in the worst way possible. So I guess that's pretty much what went wrong with the Railwaymen, I think, for me.
But also, I have a last question.
Yeah, yeah.
So this, what you said, and I really fight with it, but I mean, I don't fight with it. I know the answer to it. So, you know, these films which are basically based on real life incidents, they have this tendency of also using real life footage in between sometimes, sometimes at the end. Railwaymen does it a lot. What are your views as someone who's watching it? How does it affect you?
Mostly, like, I'm fine with it if it comes at the end credits. You know, a lot of shows, a lot of movies do that. I'm fine with that because it's basically the movie or the filmmaker is telling you, like, look how close we came to real life. Or it's basically the filmmaker sometimes showing off, saying, this is the likeness we achieved. This is the this is the reality of what happened and this is what we made of it. It's basically them saying that it existed, so take us seriously. And it's fine. I'm okay with it happening in the end credits. If it's done properly, it's fine. Here it wasn't done properly. It's just very gimmicky. It did not come across like as something organic. I don't know. It's a very stylistic choice. It's very subjective. Depends on story to story or topic to topic. But more often than not, I think I'm okay with it being done after the last shot has, after the story is over. Do you have like a specific issue with it or what?
I don't like it. I feel like it's like, as you said, it's a little self-congratulatory, like, yeah, see yeah. how what you know what we did or whatever. And I feel in the show, like Railway Man, which is anyways so surface level for so many things, the fact that they kept doing it, you know, in the first episode and a lot in the last episode, I feel it was kind of telling of their intent, you know, that they just wanted to recreate at any cost rather than basically enact. You know, that their intention was very much to just to showcase and not dive into or explore into what happened. And this also, I feel in my head, it tied up to the fact that they ended up shooting the whole thing very unimaginatively in a set.
Yeah, fair point. Yeah, I guess that's about it for Railway Man. Do you have anything else to add or are we like done? No. Raging about it. So that's Railway Man is streaming on Netflix. For those of you who might still like it, who knows, watch it if you'd like. And of course, Apoorva is streaming on Hotstar. We are hopefully going to be back next week because, you know, big Ranbir Kapoor film, Animal releasing. I'm sure we'll have many, many opinions on that. So I'm looking forward to that podcast. And we are also heading towards the end of the year. So we'll be talking hopefully about the year that was. Till then, thank you for listening and do write into us on Twitter or Facebook or wherever you find comfortable, and with any suggestions, with any comments about what we should discuss on the site. Thank you for listening and see you soon.